Welcome back to Question Medicine, where we are asking medical questions and giving medical answers based on recent medical literature. And today's question is, how well does the new drug approved by the FDA, aprocitentan or aprocitentan, really work for resistant hypertension? How well does this new drug that was approved by the FDA for resistant hypertension actually work? Did it improve the hypertension by 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 millimeters of mercury? You ponder that question, and I'll be back in 15 seconds. Andrew Bill, sunny St. Petersburg, Florida. Let's do this thing, shall we? Today's episode, today's podcast, today's whole little clip is all about the new FDA-approved drug, aprocitentan or aprocitentan. Not quite sure on the pronunciation, but this was approved March 19, 2024 by the FDA for resistant hypertension. And I could get into this whole mechanism of action, but that's all for the ivory towers. So let's actually get into what it does for the patient sitting in front of us. The landmark trial used by the FDA to approve this drug looked at just over 700 patients with resistant hypertension, despite already being on three antihypertensive medications. The baseline blood pressure or the baseline hypertensive measurements of these individuals was a mean office blood pressure of 153 over 88, which is definitely hypertension, especially when you're already on three blood pressure medications. But the mean 24 ambulatory blood pressure was 138 over 83, so not nearly as high or as alarming as 153. 153 versus 138, not quite the same. Maybe there was a little white coat hypertension being done there. The patients were given a standard combination pill of amlodipine, valsartan, and hydrochlorothiazide, and then either randomized to placebo or aprocitentan. This is really good so far, I think, because you're giving every single patient, whether you got placebo or the active ingredient, you're giving them amlodipine, valsartan, and hydrochlorothiazide. You're giving them a fixed dose combination pill of it. So you know everyone is on the exact same dose. It's not like you can go and say, well, you know, theirs was lower, but they were on a higher dose of amlodipine or a higher dose of hydrochlorothiazide or whatever it may be. So I love that aspect of it. But if you have resistant hypertension and you're already on these three medications, some sort of calcium channel blocker, some sort of ACE or ARB inhibitor here, or then some sort of diuretic, if you're already on those three medications, the standard of care is that we would then give you likely spironolactone. We would never give you placebo. So why did they not use what would be standard of care? I do not know. They wanted to use placebo probably because it's easier to beat placebo than it is to actually beat a standard of care. And after 4 weeks, yes, 4 weeks, the mean change in systolic blood pressure was 15 millimeters of mercury if you had aprocitentan versus 11 millimeters of mercury if you had placebo. Yes, those individuals that got placebo, a skittle, if you will, those that just believed that they were on a blood pressure medication had their blood pressure go down by 11 millimeters of mercury. This is a net benefit of 4 millimeters of mercury for this active drug, aprocitentan, which is impressive, I guess, because it isn't a 4 millimeter improvement on compared to placebo. But what would that do compared to actually what we would normally do, which is spironolactone? That should be the standard of care. That's what they should have compared it to. I struggle to not believe that spironolactone would have at least had a 13 or 14 millimeter mercury benefit over placebo, you know, compared to placebo. If placebo had an 11 point, I just don't think, you know, spironolactone would have only been beneficial, you know, down to 7 millimeters of mercury, while placebo was at 11, and then this aprocitentan or aprocitentan was then 15. I just don't believe that spironolactone would have been worse than placebo. I do think that it would have been better. So the question becomes, although 4 millimeters of mercury is great on a global population level, what does that mean for the patient sitting in front of me? A net of 4 millimeters of mercury? I don't really know. What's the long-term data on this? I don't really know. What is the cost of this drug going to be? No one has come out and clearly said what it will be, and I don't really know. There are so many unknowns with this drug, and I can promise you the drug reps will come in and sell it as, look at this, this is a drug you can now use that will improve the blood pressure on those individuals with resistant hypertension. What does this do for the event rates? Well, I don't really know. The follow-up here was only 4 weeks. There are so many unknowns here and so many more questions that I have other than answers even after reading this article. I guess I'm glad that we have another tool in our box of drugs that we can use for resistant hypertension, but I'm disappointed by the way the trial was run and the overall still lack of questions or lack of answers I have for all my questions. I think overall the takeaway bottom line from me is the new FDA-approved drug for resistant hypertension, aprocitentan, did improve blood pressure by a net of 4 millimeters of mercury over placebo. What was this or would this have been equal to spironolactone? What's the long-term harms, causes, damage of this aprocitentan? And what's the cost of this drug going to be? All of those are unknown at this time, and I am certainly looking for more answers to all of my questions. If you like this podcast, then please give it a review. But I know, I'm just like you. I don't give every podcast a review. So let's just be honest. If you like the podcast, just share it with a friend so we can all be a little bit better, one question at a time. And with that, I will end this podcast as I've ended every single one before it. Wait for the music. Until next time, Keith Quest and Questioning.